that they are aware of that are not in the issues report that are relevant from a policy point of view?
There's a short answer to that question, and it's got to be yes, for sure, since there's pending documentation that can only be seen as a moving target right now.
Right.
Yeah, right, yeah. I think that's probably right, Terry, yeah.
But is there anything that you're aware of currently, though, Carrie, that should be in there in terms of a policy issue?
I think that after the second of the workshops in Marrakesh, it will be very clear what the answer to that question ought to be. And the only thing I can do at this point is flag the need for our attention to that meeting, perhaps generating additional issues that have to be addressed.
Right.
Hey, Bruce, it's Marilyn. You know, I think it'd be good to sort of have parking lot to say, okay, we're going to come back to. But I do think also one of our challenges is there will be very few members of the community at the workshops. And so we are going to, are those being real-time transcribed?
They're being webcast, so that implies the whole thing.
The webcast only means audio.
Yeah. Last time out, it was both, actually. There was
okay.
a full video feed and an audio feed for because of bandwidth constraints,
yeah.
Which I assume are going to be set up significantly this time out, too.
I don't want to dwell on this, but the feedback that I often get is that members of the community can use a transcript much easier than they can dedicate hours, to live through 7 hours or 3 hours or whatever. Whatever method we're using to document those workshops and then make them available, maybe we just need to, Bruce, have some sort of a process by which we allow hearing back from people to the point that I think you were making, Carrie.
Yeah, I think one of the things that would be useful in addition to that transcript, I guess, would be to perhaps have the ICANN staff try and summarize the main points.
Yeah.
As an outcome of the workshop, because I certainly don't have time to read through a long real-time transcript either. I prefer reading minutes, which is basically these are the issues.
Yeah, I understand, but if you prefer reading minutes, imagine...
No, I'm not using that as a replacement. I'm just saying I think it's useful to have...
Well, yeah, and I was just saying, imagine trying to listen to, a webcast or a videocast. But, So, Carrie, would it meet your concerns? Because I don't think it would mind if we just sort of had an agreement that there's a category called potential additional issues or something like that.
Yeah, that's reasonable. And the IAB is wrapping up this next step statement. They want to have it in the IETF. They want to have it in the RFP editorial process. Before their meeting in Montreal, is it, which is 2 weeks after ours, 1 week after ours?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That'll be good to get that updated.
And Bert Munson is going to be holding a session in the second workshop, and that's the reason I'm saying there will be discussion of this document and its implications.
Okay.
A presentation of this document and a discussion of its implications.
Right. Okay.
It's quite clear that... during the process, we'll come up with other points that we can't think of right now. I think that the discussions of this document will bring more points to the table.
Okay. So no one's got any particular thing that they want to include in this current report, is that right?
Sorry?
Okay.
No, but Bruce, you're agreed that the current report will have this placeholder, yes?
Oh, yes, but I think that applies to anything we do, really. But I accept that with respect to other activities that are happening, so there is an IDN workshop coming up. The IETF is updating its documents, so certainly we can try and, Olaf can probably monitor those and as new issues arise out of those activities, add those. So that's a good idea.
Will do.
What's the formality of this? Is an issues report an open document until a decision is made about proceeding with the PDP, at which point it's frozen, or is it never frozen?
I think that's probably right. I mean, if you actually read the letter of the bylaws, it's a lot more restrictive than that. It says, you know, you produce an issues report in 7 days, and then you vote on it. It's a bit like the, you know, some of the versions of history that I've heard where the world's created in 7 days. But I think that's essentially probably a practical conclusion. The practical conclusion being that, you know, we can update the report before we vote on it.
Yeah, but Bruce, I think it's important to document that that is the way we intend to work, right? Because legalistic interpretations can come back to haunt us. So the idea that we intend to treat this as a living document until it's voted on, and thus to, you know, enable this kind of consideration, I think is an important...
Yeah, I think that's right, Marilyn, but bear in mind that even when you get into a task force phase of the activity, if new issues arise, they can still be dealt with through that. If the issues fit within the current terms of reference, that's fine. If not, then the council can be asked to, you know, review the terms of reference. But the processes are all living processes. But I think, as Carrie says, the actual official term of issues report would be locked down once we vote on it, just as a policy gets locked down once we vote on it.
This is all on sort of from a formality point of view. There are two pieces missing. I mean, draft terms of reference, and also related to that, the General Counsel's opinion of the whole thing. So, given that this is for the working group to propose, that should be included in, well, what we could call the final issues report, which is then put up for the council.
And what's the council timeline on this? When does council expect to freeze this and proceed with the PDP, or not, as the case might be?
I think we need to have a clear idea of what our terms of reference would be, and also how we interact with the CCNSO before we ending up on voting on something. Because otherwise, you'd be voting on an issues report to say, yeah, we think this is an issue we should study, but then not really have any clear idea of what to do next. So I would see that we'd probably be looking at some form of vote in the July timeframe once we have the update to the issues report after Marrakesh and after the IETF meeting, and also once we have a draft terms of reference that the council can consider.
Okay. Yeah, so though actually we don't need to put any kind of a marker in the present text, because there's an implicit marker, as it were, over the entire text.
Indeed.
That's right, because as Olive said, we haven't had the General Counsel's advice yet on the issues report, which forms kind of one of the latter sections. And normally the staff kind of recommend terms of reference or recommend a course of action in that report, and that recommendation's not yet there.
Bruce, may I ask a question? This is Sophia.
Hi, Sophia. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi there. Maybe I came 2 minutes late, but I'm just trying to see the agenda, and are we sort of following that and then discussing other issues as well?
Yes, we are. What we're talking about at the moment is the completeness of the issues report, which is kind of the first item on the agenda.
Okay.
And we're just looking at, Carrie's just asked the question, at what point would we consider the issues report completed? And we've talked about that the meeting in Marrakesh, there's a couple of IDN workshops, and the IETF is going to update their document, which sort of talks about some of the technical issues and some policy issues as well. And the issue report also needs a General Counsel's advice and a terms of reference. So but there's a few outstanding items in the current issues report.
So in a follow-up on that, Bruce, so are we saying that this is a regular procedure for any issues reports that we have, right? It's not anything different for the IDN?
No, I guess, Sophia, the thing is, if you read the bylaws, the process for an issues report is that it's something that meant to be turned around very quickly. I think it's seven or ten days or something, write an issues report. That probably never really happened. Most issues reports take a while to develop, and the more complex the issue, the longer it takes to write the issues report. And I recall when the Who Is Issues report was written, for example, that did take some considerable time.
And Bruce and Sophie, it's Marilyn, and probably there's a uniqueness to this because of the very apparent need to have close collaboration with a sister SO.
I find that, Marilyn. I was just wondering, you know, the agenda specifically states we're starting sort of, I guess, we're not following that right now. We're probably inserting more items in it for the next time that we meet. Can't really follow what's already there, because I was under the assumption we were going to discuss the existing issues report, given that everybody had it back.
Yeah, we are. That's what we are doing, Sophia, but we're just saying that more issues. I asked the question at the beginning of the call if anybody had any issues that they thought were missing from the report, which is the first item on the agenda, and Carrie mentioned that there will be some more issues that come up in the next week.
Oh, okay.
And that we should put them in the report when they are identified.
So the substance is not complete yet, is what we're saying. And Carrie, when you say that there are other things, that means we've not completed the report by the different groups that are reviewing it, and so we have to. We're just waiting for it to be complete by the time we finish Marrakesh or so.
Well, what I pointed out was that I anticipate some discussion, particularly at the second of the two IDN workshops, or material to be presented at the second, that would certainly require the consideration of the authors of this issues report.
Okay, great. So we're just waiting for that then, instead of discussing what's already here. So,
we are discussing what is here.
Bruce, we will. Right now, we haven't gotten to that right yet.
That's correct. Yes, that's item two on the agenda.
Yeah. I got it. Thank you.
Okay. So to finish on item one, which is, are there any other issues to add? Okay, so item two of the agenda, and I'm driving, so I don't necessarily have this agenda in front of me, but item two, I believe, is looking at a possible terms of reference. Is that right, Olaf? Have you got
item two reads prioritise policy issues.
Prioritisation of policy issues, okay. Okay, so has anyone got any thoughts on that?
Bruce, can I just sort of say something here? If the issues report is not really complete and we may anticipate other thoughts and ideas coming to it, it will be hard to prioritize anything right now.
Well, may I offer something? I don't know if all of you have the paper in front of you. It's impossible right now, as Sophia said, to prioritize everything. But I think that there are a few points here that we can say that these are, you know, the first ones that we should consider and discuss. And I want to point them out, and it would be interesting to see what all of you have to say. The first two that I think I can say which is the first and which is the second is the first one is the how should the choice of the IDN string or strings be governed? How would the approaches for DTLDs and for CCTLDs differ? This is, I think, a very crucial question when we start discussing this whole issue. And the second one that's about the same priority is would any or both of the two approaches under consideration for technical tests lead to overall satisfactory results from a policy perspective? Some of you may know my opinion on one of the things that is offered, one of the technical solutions that is offered, which dictates a very specific policy. And so this is something that we should, I think, put as one of the first two things that we should discuss. After that, I think the next important point is the question, should entities other than the existing TLD registry be entitled to run an IDN equivalent or equivalents of this TLD? And it continues. I think this is also a very important point, because we start from here. There are a lot of questions later on that these the answers to these ones will in some way define the answers to the next ones. If you will allow me a few more, the next one I think is very important is what are the advantages and drawbacks of having a TLD and its internationalized equivalent in the same TLD or in two different TLDs. If I understand the question right, this is in some way asking, should we have D-names or not? The next one would be what considerations need to be made for languages and scripts used across multiple countries. Again, we go to the governing issue. I think that these are the first four or five points that we should consider. I did prioritize another two, but it will be interesting at this point to hear what you have to say.
I have two comments. And the one is that I think is actually crucial for the GNSO to keep in mind what that G means and be very sensitive to the fact of the CC in the CCNSO being responsibility for a lot of the issues that were just listed. So as Marilyn points out, I mean, this is one of the things that requires coordinated policy development between the two NSOs. But again, we are not addressing all of the issues that attach to the internationalization of the top level of the domain name space. We are addressing the G component of that action, which in one sense makes it easier for us to focus. But on the other hand, we have this anguish that's caused by the different basis. There is a natural point of departure for the discussion of creating localized equivalents of CC labels. There is no equally apparent principle as a jumping off point for the creation of localized G TLD labels. And I think that's one of the things that really does need to be discussed. It's actually not a policy issue. It's more of an intellectual exercise that has to be conducted before meaningful policy discussion can begin.
This is Marilyn. I'm going to ask two things. When we speak, could we identify ourselves? Because I know we're recording this, and I don't recognize everyone's voice.
No. Sorry, it was Yoav here. Yoav, Terry.
And Terry, I think.
And Terry,
So I'm going to just raise a question that I don't mean to debate now, but I would like us to come back to it. And here's what the question is. While I respect that the GNSO has a policy, a responsibility for generic names, and the CCNSO has a policy responsibility for country names, for country code names, yet there may be a need, let me say it that way, to have as much consistency as possible. So, for instance, we see that country codes have adopted the UDRP or a variety of the UDRP, a NUDRP, a nationalized UDRP. And I think we should ask ourselves the question and ask the GNSO the question of, where is it important for purposes of end-to-end interoperability and as much consistency as possible to the users to have a form of consistency? Even though country codes have implemented a nationalized or a localized version of a UDRP, many of them have based that on the generic UDRP policy voluntarily. So perhaps we could just ask that question and document it in our discussion and then come back to it in talking to the CCNSO. As a user, business users register in the companies that I advise, for instance. One of them has, I think, 30 to 50 registrations and country codes and actively uses them because they want a market-facing presence in that country. So they care a great deal about what happens in country codes.
Okay. Any other comments on prioritization? Okay, well, that, I think then sort of leads us into the terms of reference discussion, and that I think is should be an outcome basically of, you know, there, I guess there are two options from policy development side. One option is that the GNSO and CCNSO combine in some way, which I think will be complicated because then you'll have to be sort of rewriting the rules as you go all the way along. Or you kind of identify a split and you say, okay, CCNSO, you focus on this issue and the GNSO will focus on these issues, and we keep the work coordinated. So I guess that's a decision that needs to be made in the future, and certainly that's partly why we need to also talk to the CCNSO and get their views. But if we just take a GNSO point of view as a starting point, and let's just assume the GNSO was just doing a policy development process for DTLD in terms of reference. One way of doing the terms of reference would be to consider following a terms of reference that's fairly close to our UGTLD terms of reference, because at least then we've got a framework that at least within the GNSO people understand, where there's an exercise of identifying what are the selection criteria for who gets to operate a particular IDN string, and also what's the allocation, given that in situations where more than one party wants to either operate the same string or perhaps more importantly a string for the same purpose. Because one of the things that's come out of the new GTLD process so far is there's fairly strong support for having a new, let's call it a new ASCII string, to be differentiated in purpose compared to the existing string. So if you had something like dot travel, you wouldn't have something that has exactly the same purpose. That may then flow over into IDN strings, where it probably becomes more of an important issue, where you might find, well, someone, big dot travel is only for English-speaking people, and they want to have some equivalence in another language, and they feel that they should be able to operate that potentially in competition with the operator of the dot travel string. So I think a framework that's consistent with what we're looking at new GTLD across, and I'm sort of interested to hear what people's views are on using a similar terms of reference framework.
I'm Gary again. One of the things about IDN that I have no idea how widely it's realized is that it actually introduces very few new problems. What it does is make familiar problems ever so much more intricate and complicated. And as far as what you were just addressing, Bruce, the problem of determining what constitutes adequate differentiation between a proposed new TLD label and a pre-existing TLD label is compounded immeasurably by the fact that the same word can appear in two entirely different languages using two entirely different scripts. And because it's semantically identical, is it the same string, or because it is in its written form completely different is the two different strings. So issues of differentiation still need to be addressed. We don't need a new rubric for that. It's just that it's a far more intricate thing. And we have the new aspect, well, actually there is a new aspect to it, I'm now contradicting myself, that there can be a situation where we say, no, this one language string is not sufficiently different from this other language string for them to be two different domains. But if the request for the second language is made by either by the incumbent operator of the first string or by a prospective new operator who wants the two different strings for what's going to be the same domain, we have to deal with that too. So the differentiation, that discussion can be conducted in the conventional, in the familiar framework, but again, there's a new dimension to it.
Yeah, so I think what you're pointing out there, Carrie, is having this discussion within the framework of new GTLDs probably also helps improve the policy in new GTLDs, because as you say, people might describe something in fairly loose terms to say, okay, as long as the strings are differentiated, and then when someone actually gives an actual example in English, it seems pretty obvious. So, you know, yeah, I can see clearly that these two strings shouldn't exist, because for me as an English speaker looking at the Latin script, they look clearly the same. But if you were to put something up in another language or another script, personally, I'd have no idea. I wouldn't know whether they were the same. And then suddenly it becomes much more difficult to define what is different.
Well, I mean, the watchdog mechanism becomes commensurately more encumbered as well.
Yeah.
It would be possible for somebody to pull a fast one on the review panel simply by using scripts and languages that are utterly unknown to the review panel, but look different enough.
Yes, exactly.
Gary, when you say that, though, so perhaps you're just suggesting that we need to build in a mechanism by which there is this elucidation of that issue, and it needs to be flagged and made transparent broadly to the community.
I trust that is IBM.
I think so. And what I actually suspect sooner or later is going to happen is that thus far, someone wishing to operate a new TLD has requested a string. But it's very easy to imagine a situation, given the multilinguality of all this, where the prospective operator of a new domain will be requesting several strings for it. And my comments earlier about the natural basis for this discussion in the CC realm, I mean, CC TLDs do equate to countries, geopolitical bounded countries, politically bounded countries, and in any such country, there may be several languages that have some legal status, so the government of that country could say that we are talking only about our national domain, however it needs to be represented in three or four different ways. And there's no equivalent of principle that's apparent that applies to the GTLD sphere, but we have to be darn certain that there is no such principle before we go and get terribly terribly far along the policy development path. And again, for a new prospective operator to come along and say, I can take my pet case, library. I mean, the library community would like to do what the museum community has done. And one of the sticking points is that in the Anglophone frame of reference, the word library means exactly what I'm using it to mean. But in the Francophone frame of reference, that word means bookstores. And in the Francophone frame of reference, it would be the word bibliothèque that would be necessary. So the library community, without getting anywhere near IDN, would actually need two strings. And if we're going to turn them just into three-letter initialisms, .lib and .bib would be necessary to designate one new GTLD. And I suppose that also illustrates the point that there are issues of multiple names for single TLDs that don't necessarily require the use of we're designated by IDN. And you can have multiple ASCII designations, each of which equates to a language which happens to be adequately representable with ASCII script. Sorry, ASCII voice, not ASCII script, with the basic Latin alphabet.
Yeah, so that brings an interesting point, Carrie, because if we're saying, I think the interesting point that hasn't been discussed in the new TLD environment is the concept that a particular organization might want a set of strings to represent their purpose. So far, I think it's been assumed that a particular operator says, or a particular organization says, I want this string for this purpose. And what you're talking about is someone saying, I have a set of strings which may have the Latin script or may have the different scripts in it, and that set of strings would represent that particular purpose.
Well, I think the purpose is still, there's no difference there. I would like to operate a top-level domain for the following purpose, but the target community of that purpose happens to be multilingual, and the needs, the legitimate equitable needs of that community cannot be met solely by using Latin script. But there will be cases where multiple labels can all be represented adequately in Latin script, and there will be cases where we need to invoke what we're calling IDN.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with that. Yeah.
It's probably worth mentioning also that the IDN protocol says that with the advent of IDN, there is no longer any such thing as non-IDN.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is what I've
just
said,
subset,
actually,
yeah.
In another term.
Because, I mean, the interesting thing, actually, Carrie, is essentially we are representing the Latin script with a subset of ASCII characters, aren't we? That's essentially the...
Even English, which is written using Latin script, requires accented things. The word naive, the word resume, the word cafe. I mean, Oxford English uses diacritical marks. It's just that we're actually quite comfortable dispensing with them in any number of contexts. So English is comfortably represented with the ASCII subset of Latin script. Many other languages, often used by very, very small language communities, are as well. So we're kind of looking at this what would be the word, sequence of compound problems, where the notion of one domain, one label, which has been the basic premise thus far, is likely not to prove transportable into the all that distant future. But the notions of multiple labels for a single domain doesn't necessarily require the use of anything other than Latin script, basic Latin script. However, it obviously also can require the use of more than simply basic Latin script, and that will take the form of decorated Latin characters and completely different scripts. And we need, I think, to develop policies that can comfortably accommodate all of these things, with there being no differentiation. I mean, just make a statement that will allow for all of this variation.
Yeah, so we need to, I think, sort of some practical examples in, this is why I'm sort of thinking that from a GNSO point of view, we should use the same framework we've had for the new GTLD process. But I think there is benefit in having a separate task force or working group of some form to specifically focus on the IDN aspects of almost each of the policy or initial policy recommendations that we have. So if we take a policy recommendation like should be differentiated by purpose, having a group look at that in some more detail with some examples and saying, well, here's some examples of a set of strings that someone might put forward for a particular purpose, which is something we haven't covered yet. I think when we're, the GNSO for new TLDs is actually about to enter into a phase in Marrakesh where we're going to ask groups like the GAC and say, well, even just for the Latin script strings, do you see any issues? Because I'm sure that some governments would probably say, well, we don't want someone creating .China, for example, if they've got nothing to do with China.
Well, I mean, that's a shared interest. I mean, there are incumbent GTLD registry operators that feel exactly the same way about a government's right to say, well, it's our language, therefore we get to operate that domain. So we actually share headaches from different sides of the same issue. Again, and Marilyn said it at the outset, and I've agreed with it once before, and I have to stress it, that this is one particular policy development process that cannot be treated on two separate tracks, hoping that they'll tracks don't converge ever.
Right.
It's wrong metaphors, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on terms of reference? So for those that are involved in the new GTLD process, which is probably half the people on this call, but Marilyn, Carrie and Sophia, does that seem reasonable that we try and structure it in a similar way between the way we're looking at new GTLDs? Because really, IDN strings is really just a subset of introducing a new TLD in a way.
Can I ask a side question here? The COTO IDN committee conducted a rather elaborate poll of the community about these kinds of questions. They had what was an issues report, this list of questions addressing differentiation, single operation of multiple strings, and there was massive input from the community, and then the committee summarized all of that. So there are these three documents.
Carrie, I didn't understand. Who did that?
There was a previous IDN committee. You've heard mention of Kato-san and his group.
Oh, the Kato. Thank you.
Yeah. What I'm suggesting is that it would probably be very useful for all of us to review that material. You'll find it on the ICANN website looking at committees. And there have been several IDN committees, but the one that Kato-san headed concluded the first phase of its work. They concluded their own deliberations by posting a report which contained a very large number of specific questions that they wished to have answered by anyone who wanted to answer them.
Yeah.
And there were answers from the community from all conceivable perspectives, which then the committee then wove into a final report summarizing community sentiment. And because that is so clearly relevant to what we're talking about, we'd both be making life easier for ourselves and meaningfully proceeding with work that's already been done, if we were familiar with this, again, before we proceed very much further with anything.
Yeah, it's Marilyn. I support our reviewing it. I will tell you, from my own perspective, I'm either smarter or more scared now about the complexity that I was then, Carrie. So I do think it's very important to be informed about it. But I suspect for many people, they've learned a lot more since then.
Okay. I suppose I can summarize. I mean, one of the key conclusions that was made then, and it's quite likely to be the kind of thing that we would also sooner or later need to make a statement about, is that there is no difference between an IDN TLD label and any other TLD label. It may look funnier from the perspective of somebody who was only familiar with Latin script, but there is no essential difference in a request for a TLD when the label for that TLD is expressed with a non-Latin script than when the label is expressed with Latin script.
I don't know if I believe that anymore, Carrie.
Okay. But we do need to make a statement. It's nothing other than saying that we have reviewed the previous work of the IDN committees that have gone before us.
Right.
And note that the following key conclusions were drawn, and we do not feel that these conclusions withstand implementation in light of subsequent development, which we then need to review.
I heard somebody else speaking, too.
Just going to make a comment to Bruce's initial question. This is Sophia, Bruce.
Okay.
Just first make a comment on what you had sort of asked as. I think the following the new GTLD methodology in terms of reference is a good starting point, because such a complex issue, and I have to say that, Carrie, you started by saying, there are only few probably introductions that would probably make it vary it or creative variants to the existing terms of reference that we could have used. But then, you know, based on the discussion, even in listening to you now, you know, and knowing some of the issues, it's quite complex. But I think from the umbrella point of view, in terms of guidance, I think it's a good idea to follow the existing GTLD terms of reference that we've used. That's just on the procedural side. And just to comment on the Kyoto, I just never pronounced that very well, but is that the Kyoto Committee or Kyoto?
Kato.
Okay, great. Kato Committee. I think I have read a lot of the report and the inputs in the past of what they've said. And I think, Carrie, you have asked a question and then you answered your own question in terms of, you know, there are many, many ideas and recommendations that they've brought forward that we could consider right now is conflicting even with the implementation methods that we're recommending or we have discussed in the past within the IDN or GNSO. My suggestion is we look at it not only from the TLD point of view. They have also made recommendation on implementation and moving forward and that sort of thing, that it will give us a good perspective, even if we put a disclaimer saying we've looked at it and not taken the recommendations. But you will find at the end that there are, you know, it's a two-pronged approach that they have used, and at the end we're going to find it that based on what I think the voices of the many are in this group, it will be a conflicting if we could just say, you know, we've looked at the recommendations and we have, you know, we're not looking at this. There may be some we're going to draw out and then some we're going to put aside saying this doesn't fit. But I think moving forward from what the work that was done by ICANN in the last 4 or 5 years on IDNs, and where we're at right now and where we want to go is going to be a bit different from any of the intellectual discussions people have had in the past. So based on that, I think it's a good idea, Carrie, you're right, to be comprehensive and look at every report and exhaust every resource that we've had. But I'm pretty sure the outcome is going to be selective and different. So that's just what I wanted to say.
Okay. Any other comments on terms of reference?
Hello, it's Olof. I'm back again. I got disconnected for unknown reasons.
And let me announce that I will be cut off in 8 minutes just because my hotel only allows hour-long conference calls.
All right. That's very helpful of them. Yeah. No doubt I charge you a need for that as well. So the fourth topic I think on our call then is, it's still on topic three, which is in terms of reference. I've had some discussions on IDNs with respect to CCTLDs, and there's, I suppose, some different ways of looking at it from a, I guess as Carrie put it, an intellectual point of view, but the CCNSO currently and CCTLDs currently as specified in an international standard, which is a set of two-letter codes that I think originally came out of the telecommunications industry.
It came out of the it's the ISO 3166.
That's the name of the standard. But didn't it?
Right.
I was told that originally came from using those letters as part of...
from the mailing...
But essentially, I guess historically, John Postel and others have said, well, let's use a definitive list to decide what strings get selected to represent countries, and that ISO standard is the list that's been provided.
Right.
So technically, that's what the CCNSO and CCTLDs are based around, and everything else at the moment is structured in ICANN is kind of in the GNSO area. One of the suggestions that's been put forward recently, and I think it might have come from some of the members of the board that come from regions outside of English-speaking countries, but one of the suggestions was actually to form a new list that included, I suppose the correct terminology here, that includes scripts other than Latin. So there's an alternative list created, but the intent of the list would be that those strings are still related in meaning or semantics to the concept of the name of the country in some form.
Carrie, just a historical sidelight perhaps. In the sequence of commentary generated during the Kato San exercise, the ISO 3166 maintenance agency said what they thought ought to be applied to the selection of equivalents to the CCTLD to their codes. And they felt that it was very, very wise of Postel to have opted to use the country codes rather than undertake the daunting task of otherwise abbreviating or accommodating
right.
local notions of country name.
Right.
And they felt that we should stick to those abbreviations and allow there to be other script equivalents of those abbreviations. And I'm not really sure that's a viable stance, but there's a certain amount of presumption in one language community assuming that its notions of abbreviation are recognized and applicable in another language environment. So I don't know if the concept of two-letter codes is really global or not, and that's one of the things we would have to determine, I suppose, before proceeding. But in any case, the 3166 maintenance agency felt that, say, if the Arabic script community wished to use its set of country codes, then they should come up with two Arabic character abbreviations, as it were, or some other terse abbreviation. But the thing we needed to avoid was seeing the appearance of extensive country names as domain names. And back in the old days, everything was two or three characters. This time around, we are talking about extensive labels. So the 3166 MA input last time around doesn't cover everything that we need to cover. But
it's complex. Yeah, it is. So the proposal that I've seen, Carrie, is that it would be a two-character string to maintain consistency with, I guess, that original principle.
What I'm predicting is that we will find that is linguistically and culturally either impossible or unacceptable in not just one language environment, but probably in several. There is a certain amount of Anglo-centric presumption here. I think
you're probably right.
Yeah.
But let me just sort of run the argument here a little bit. So the argument is that one way I think that's useful is to, if you like, break the knot between the CCNSO and the GNSO with respect to looking at this topic. And I think most of the topics we can sort of manage the way we've discussed as part of looking at new TLDs generally. But what we could say is that the CCNSO could initially focus on the concept of building an alternative table, and the initial proposal on the table is that alternative table have two-letter strings. But I think, Carrie, that we as a GNSO could probably leave that to the CCNSO to consider.
I'm not really sure, but I can just point out the fact that the notion of a two-letter string assumes that you're using an alphabetic script. And the largest language in the world does not use an alphabetic script. There's no such thing as a letter.
Okay, the two-character then, sorry.
There's another assumption, kind of a policy assumption, in this going into listing now all the abbreviations of all the countries in all the different languages, which probably will get a few hundred thousand options, maybe more than that. That's one problem, and the other thing is we are coming from a policy point of view that we are actually going to have IDN CCTLDs, which is something that I think we should consider in this in our discussions, and ICANN in the entire ICANN community should consider, because if you go for, as we'll discuss here, for IDN GTLDs, that's a different thing, and it might be a more simple solution just to solve the problem with having IDN GTLDs, let's say in Arabic, in Chinese, or in any other languages, and not get to other CCTLDs, because then you'll need to get to the question, a very problematic policy question, of which country, what languages each country can have its own CCTLD, and then what are the basic terms to decide if that country is going to have CCTLD in the script or language or whatever you call it.
Yes.
So just to give an example that I left with with Terry about 2 months ago, when I found out from him that Yiddish is a formal language of Sweden, and probably there are about 3 or 4 people speaking that language in Sweden. So will that create be a term for having a Hebrew script CCTLD for Sweden? This is very problematic, and so I think that we should answer a few policy questions before we get into listing all the options for the for these abbreviations.
Yeah, well, not a little time instead of comment. The CCs say exactly what you just said about the non need for GTLD IDN GTLD, and they just say CC where you say G and G where you say CC, which is why it is so necessary to coordinate this. The localization of their namespace as obvious, necessary, and natural, and the localization of GTLD strings as ridiculous. And from the ICANN perspective, from the GNSO perspective, we have to address the issues of GTLD policy, the CC, but from ICANN's perspective, indeed, they have the headache that you just described, and we're supposed to advise ICANN.
So just picking up some of the comments there, so the proposal is kind of, you're right, there is, by saying that we're going to create some table of strings, does imply that we've accepted the concept of a CCTLD string. And I think, as Carrie says, that's kind of something that the ICANN board and the GAC will have to grapple with, but I can almost tell you what the answer will probably be, which will be yes. And then the second part of your issue was a particular country code or country might suggest several strings, potentially in different
scripts.
Different scripts, and even potentially different languages. I think what had been proposed so far, one of the things here is to say what's the next step that can be taken within that framework of CCTLD, and the proposal as a next step is to choose a single IDN string containing 2 IDN characters, and that's kind of the constraints that's put on it. And as Carrie says, when selecting the original, Latin character-based country codes, there was a constraint there, basically, that you choose one, and it comprises of 2 characters. So there was a constraint put in that original ISO 3166 standard by choosing one, and that it consists of 2 Latin characters. What they're talking about doing is opening the constraint by only one direction, if you like. So you can add one other string, and it may contain IDN characters. And I guess, Carrie, it could potentially, if you're going to do that, an English-speaking country may decide to say, well, we've chosen our string and it happens to contain Latin characters and it's a slightly different variation. So for Australia, I suppose you could have OZ, because Oz is often used in Australia as well instead of AU.
But there's a less frivolous example. Just take Wales. There are component entities in the United Kingdom that use Latin-based scripts but they require more than the ASCII repertoire, and they have very, very strong feelings of
need to highlight cultural identity.
Off.
This is fascinating. I need more of this discussion, but I'm going to be cut off.
I will
catch up with all of you later.
Actually, in the case of Waves, this is all of, well, they've been approaching us, and they would like to have the extension CUM, which is spelled C-Y-M, but pronounced CUM for Cymru.
What is that?
It's the Welsh word for whale.
Yeah.
Okay. We're learning new language.
But this highlights a point that I think we really have to heed, and that is the notion of internationalization doesn't mean that we are looking at non-ASCII scripts. That there are languages, non-English, differentiated from the current approach to naming top-level domains that don't require the use of anything other than the repertoire that we already have. Case in point, Wales.
Could I mention another example just for fun? I mean, we have got RU for Russia. All right, if you sort of transcribe that, or rather take the name of Russia in Russian, which is Rusia, then that's R, well, actually, it's written in Cyrillic with the letters that look exactly identical to P-Y.
Which is Paraguay.
Exactly.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're having this discussion, that this notion about non-Latin scripts being visually indistinguishable from Latin script and therefore a useful tool for nefarious ends. Yoav was there. You were also there, right, Olaf, in Geneva?
No, I'm in Brussels.
Right. Okay.
There
was this proud presentation from a Russian of the localized version of his CCTLD label, which indeed is RU ASCII, and it's also RU in Russian, but the characters are written identically to PY, which is Paraguay, and it therefore .ru cannot have its from Cyrillic two-letter equivalent because it is not distinguishable visibly from another country's two-letter, what in fact happens to be ASCII designation.
Just a comment. Bruce, having this this example, are you sure that automatically the answer is going to be yes?
But the same thing, that question's already been asked and answered. It's not, Bruce isn't predicting anything. Bruce is leaking.
Okay.
I think with the discussion, I'll be interested to hear what the CCNSO people have to say on this topic. But from my point of view, just wearing a GNSO hat, it's a nice sort of area to carve off and say, you know, here's a set of constraints, you guys go and work on that. And one of the suggestions has been that the CCNSO ask the GAC for its advice on the selection of the strings. But they're separating that from the allocation of those strings. So just as with CCTLDs currently, the fact that a country has a string, two-letter string, doesn't necessarily mean that automatically someone can just stick their hand up and say, hey, I want to run it. There is a separate process for, or in fact, a separate existing process for delegating CC strings to a particular operator.
Yeah.
And the concept there is that if the string is chosen by a group, which could involve members of the GAC for a particular country, then ICANN would apply its existing process for delegating that string to any particular operator of that string using the CCTLD processes. So that's kind of the proposal that's on the table from that side of things, and that's something I want to hear more from the CCNSO reps. But by and large, unless I see a direct conflict with what we're trying to do at the GNSO, if the CCNSO support that as an approach, I think we should also support that. Does anyone have any views on that? Okay, so the final topic today then is really just
the timetable of related meetings in Marrakesh. The plan is for this group to meet again on Saturday evening, I think at 6 p.m. On the 24th, so the first Saturday at the beginning of the week. And then what I'll try and do is arrange a meeting with some of the CCNSO, which will probably be the chair of the CCNSO, Chris Despain. I think Charles Chaban is kind of members of both groups. I think Charles represents some of the GNSO members, but is also on the CCNSO Council. And there's Mohammed, I haven't got his last name in front of me, but...
We're talking about Diop?
Diop?
From the Sudan.
No.
No, yeah. Yeah, so no, it's not Mohammed Diop, it's Mohammed
Al-Bashir,
I think.
Al-Bashir, he's the one who was involved in the guidelines, yeah.
He's going to be... I don't think Charles is going to be in Marrakesh. I think Mohammed is. Chris Despain will be there, and Hira Hotta will be there. And so what I was proposing is that we have a smaller group meet with them, probably particularly to talk about this point, I think, would be the main one. And then other than that, just let them know that the GNSO is probably thinking of following a policy process fairly similar to the new GTLD process. So I think we'll meet on Saturday evening and then work out how to handle, I guess, the meeting.
I won't be arriving until 10 p.m. on Saturday evening, so I won't be around for the meeting.
Okay, I might be catching up with you at breakfast on Sunday then, Kat.
Yeah, okay.
So that's kind of the sort of Saturday evening, Sunday morning. Then Sunday afternoon there's an IDN workshop. One of the topics of the IDN workshop is kind of what's the issues report and just letting people know what's in the issues report and what our thinking is so far. And so that'll probably be a panel of me, Chris Despain from the CCNSO. I think it's me, Hira Hotta and Olaf, I think. Just letting people know what the next steps are from the policy development side. Then there's another workshop on, I think, is it Wednesday afternoon? Is that right, Olaf?
Tuesday afternoon.
I think Tuesday afternoon. There's another workshop on IDNs. I gather the
Did we have a copy of all this yet, or you're just telling us now?
Being
sent out to the council list. Oh. Under IDN workshop? No, under council list. Oh, no. I'm just saying the subject matter. Oh, yes. Does it say IDN? I didn't get it then. That's right. It's the subject matter had said IDN. I did not get it. When did that come out? No, the subject matter said Marrakesh schedule. Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead, Bruce. There are many IDN workshops then. That we have three of them in 1 week?
Two.
There is two IDN workshops, which are public workshops. One's on Sunday afternoon and one is on Tuesday afternoon. And then there is a meeting of this group, you know, this group on the phone call today, on Saturday evening at 6 o'clock.
Which Saturday is that, Bruce?
Saturday the 24th of June.
Okay, great.
Bruce, I won't be able to make it to Marrakesh, so I'll be happy if you can just, you know, update after the meeting.
Yes, certainly be doing that.
By email or something.
Yep.
Yes, Bruce, and it's Paul BS Network Solutions. I don't arrive until about 7:15. I don't expect to be at the hotel till well after 8. So I can either join you all later or we'll just catch up, get an update, and then be...
Yeah, I'll give you an update, Paul. I think it's really just probably just... I'm not sure. I sort of split this call up into two time zones. It looks like we've probably got most of the people on this call anyway, so there may not be that much more we can discuss other than perhaps giving any further update on what I've heard on the CCNSO side.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm not certainly not going to be a major decision-making meeting. It's just touching base before Sunday's meetings.
Very good.
Okay, so the three main meetings then is one on the Saturday night on the 24th, which is amongst this group,
Then there's two public workshops, one on Sunday and one on Tuesday afternoon. The topics for those, I assume, will be on the ICANN website. I think the Sunday is meant to be more high-level, almost tutorial-oriented.
The first slot on Sunday, actually, I've got for a real baby steps presentation. And then the dense material comes on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, yeah, that's what I was expecting, yeah. Okay, any other comments anyone wants to make? Okay, at that point I'll close the call then and thank everyone for attending.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night to you
all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.